session number 24197, rule 4.
In relation to the Germans' approach, Rommel arrives in piecemeal on the 10th and the 11th of April and improvised attacks, as you say, are driven off. What were you to hear of the more solid attacks that were to come 13th?
Yes, well, we heard that they'd broken through and that their tanks had got through, but their infantry were knocked around a bit because we were told that the Australian troops couldn't stop the tanks that were coming in first, so they let them go. And that then the Australian infantry had taken up their positions in the post, and apparently they were Italians. Infantry attacking, and they were pretty well knocked around, but they eventually broke in and caused what we called the salient. They formed a salient into our defences and took all those posts that were associated with the boundary, but we understood too that when they got further in, the tanks were knocked out by the artillery and our own tanks, the British artillery they were, actually, regular troops.
I presume this was the 30th of April where Rommel had hoped to make a full-scale attempt to take Tobruk, and he managed to secure, as you mentioned, the foothold in the western sector. What were your initial experiences of being involved in combat yourself? Or close
to it. Well, 10 platoon of B Company were sent out on the first patrol. This would have been just before the first German troops arrived, but we were sent out, our platoon was sent out one night under Pat Henner in a patrol that went out 1,000 or so yards one of the roads in to guide the 2nd 15th Battalion in. We just took up positions and stayed there half the night, but most of the troops that came through were Indian troops, and they got a hell of a shock when we stood up and challenged them. We didn't know whether they were Indians or what they were, but we soon knew because the British officer with them said, "Where's that bloody Ben gun? Bring that up to the front, quick, smart." He had it at the rear, you see, because they were withdrawing. But as soon as we heard that voice, we knew they were friendly troops. So we just guided them through on their way in. But the 2nd 15th never arrived. They must have gone in some other track.
The patrols that you mentioned obviously played an important role. Can you tell us how you saw the importance of those patrols?
Yeah, well, they made it quite clear to us that the patrols were very necessary each night, so that really it was pushing our front line further out. to give us protection in case of night attack or sneak attacks. A couple of times we made contact with the Italians, and they were doing the same sort of thing. They had had somebody out as an outpost to make sure they weren't attacked. But we just fired a few shots, and they fired a few shots, and we just pulled out and went back again.
The idea of the fighting defence.
Yes.
How did that give you morale, apart from anything else, do you think?
Well, at least we knew that there were patrols out there every night in front of us, so we'd get plenty of warning of any potential attack.
Can you give us an idea of the average day, particularly early on, when the Germans were making their first forays in?
Yeah, well, that was only in one sector that they came in, really. The rest of the area, there was nothing happening at all. We had troops on guard every night in the post, and we had patrols out every night. Doesn't matter what part of the front, but our company were in an area that the 6th Division had attacked Tobruk in the first place. And if I remember rightly, we didn't have much of a tank trap in front of us. A lot of the areas had tank traps dug out in front so that stopped tanks getting in. But we mainly slept as much as possible during the day. That's very nice down in one of those deep areas, but we had to make sure that there was somebody on the lookout all the time. It was fairly boring, really, because there was nothing happening, except that we were going out on patrols probably every third night. You'd find yourself on patrol, and we'd spend a good percentage of the night traipsing up and down, keeping our eyes open, going to ground, looking around, and then hoping you'd find your way back again.
Presumably you had to be careful of where the mines were laid.
Yeah, see, right. Well, they were not laid right next to the post, but we knew where they were. So we were, as long as you were careful, you'd be all right. One bloke stood on a mine, I think, that I remember. Didn't help him much.
In relation to the average day, you mentioned boredom a lot of the time, and there is this sort of saying a lot of the time in a soldier's life, the majority of the time is boredom, and very short spaces of excitement and action.
That would be right.
What was the general feeling of your situation at that time? Obviously the siege was on. What was the feeling then, knowing that you were involved in a place that was under siege?
Yes, well, a lot of them were wondering how long they would be there. They thought perhaps we'll be here a couple of months anyhow, the way things are, because we realised also that Rommel would be moving right down to the front, to the Egyptian front. And we were hoping he'd be well occupied there. But we were getting plenty of information I think each day we used to get a what they call the Tobruk Truth, a sort of a newspaper with just with general information and world information, the BBC News and all that sort of thing, and where they could, they were also bringing meal, hot meal around once a day.
What did that entail for you?
The meal? Well, we'd certainly look forward to a hot meal. We had mainly it was bullied beef and onions, and very little vegetable. We never got any fresh food at all. It was all tin stuff mainly.
In relation to what was going on around, I mean, presumably the idea that you were cut off pretty well largely from anyone else. How did that affect the troops, do you think?
We were, well, the troops all inside. Well, we'd heard about the action where they'd broken through and caused the sailing, and I think we were just as determined to play our part if necessary. If there was going to be an attack on our front, I think we were quite ready for it.
Did you feel isolated? To what degree did you feel alone?
Well, each post, you felt a bit alone at night.
But as a whole, as a part of the siege, as a part of those people in Tobruk, was there a general feeling
of being alone? I don't think so. There would have been more than 20,000 troops there, and it's the front line is a fair way out from Tobruk itself. Every now and again they'd they'd take us or take some of us for a swim. Well, that was mainly when we were relieved into a rest area. They'd take us for a swim, and it's very pleasant, except that we used to get bombed a bit. And
did you understand the importance of what you were doing, or what you were trying to achieve at Tobruk?
Yeah.
How did you
that
see
was,
that?
That was told. We were told that it was important for us to keep that thorn in your side as much as possible, and to resist any attempt to capture Tobruk itself. It probably had a factor in holding up Rommel a bit in his attack on Egypt.
In relation to the situation, obviously, you mentioned that you were bombed while you were swimming. But did you experience bombing in the front line at all?
Yes, they'd occasionally bomb you, but it'd be mainly shelling. They'd shell particularly the areas around about the salient. They seemed to be more active there. We'd spend, say, a couple of weeks in one position, and then they'd move us into another one. They were changing the troops around, relieving all the troops that were in the action and putting the other ones in, and moving them about.
Were you to experience shelling?
Oh, yes.
At close range. What was it? What could you describe to us?
We could see their guns. There was a... This was at one edge of the salient we're in. We could see their guns on a high ground, about 1,500 yards away, I suppose. If there was any movement at all around our post during the day, they'd shell it. The Padre came to visit us once. We said, look, here comes the Padre. He was walking up. We hoped he'd get to us before they started shelling. So he came in and had a little talk to us and had a service for those that wanted it. But the good God must have been looking after him, I think. Then he went up and saw some of the other posts. I don't know whether you're supposed to be walking around the post like that. He didn't seem to worry about it. And also the colonel called once, but he came by vehicle.
This is Lloyd?
Yes. He came in a Bren gun carrier, and which was like a little open tank. He came into the post and had a good talk to us about the situation. We were, because that vehicle had arrived and stopped outside our post, they started shelling us, you see. We were under observation all the time. So the Colonel and I were having a bit of a conversation, but we were doing press-ups on the floor together. Every time the shells would come, we could drop down on the ground, on the floor of the.
What were some of the things that you were to talk about to Colonel Lloyd that you can recall?
Oh, he had asked about the patrols at night and how much shelling we were getting and whether we could, what we could see of the enemy. Questions like that. Then he'd move on to the next post.
Can you describe to us what it's like to be shelled, to be under fire by enemy guns?
Well, with shelling, after a while you get used to the sound of the shell and you can tell almost whereabouts it's going to land. You wouldn't take a risk on it. You'd take cover as much as you could at the time. But we used to say, look out, this one will be close. You'd tell when it was going to be close. Mortars were a different proposition because you wouldn't hear those until the last minute, the last few seconds before they landed. And you'd hear sort of a swish and realise that it was coming. But shelling, you could hear it coming all the way. And as it got towards you, you had a fair idea where it was going to land.
In regard to shelling, if it doesn't actually damage you physically, how does it affect you mentally, being under enemy fire like that?
Well, like everything else, you can get used to it. It certainly worry you a bit because you never knew if they were going to be accurate or not. But, you know, if they might land one right in your post. But I never experienced that trouble. I remember one post we were in, it landed just outside the communication part of the post, which was only about 3 feet wide, I suppose, just landed on the outside of it. And I know what had caused us to be shelled that time, because a cobber of mine was repairing a an Italian machine gun, and he'd been working on it for about a week, and he just got to the stage where he wanted to fire it. I said, "You can't fire that thing, you know, as you finish it." "Oh, yes, I can." "No, you can't." So he went off and asked the officer about it, and he told him he could fire it. So he fired it all right, but it, what we called it, drew the crabs, because we got shelled pretty heavily after that. It was a heavy, big heavy machine gun.
To what degree were the bush artillery able to counter fire?
Oh, I think they did a bit of good, but they didn't have the capacity of the 25 pounders that the British troops had, and they were the only real artillery that we had. I mean, it kept the boys occupied, fiddling around with them, but I don't think they did much good. If they'd been, when they were attacked directly, it could have been very handy.
And what of being attacked from the air? Were you ever experience anything like that?
Yeah.
What was that like?
In the beginning, they used to, the German fighters used to come along the front machine gunning, and apparently we had about three Hurricanes in Tobruk at the early stage. And they decided that they'd send a Hurricane along the front and let people see that we had an air force. Well, we didn't take any notice of what it looked like. We just shot at it. And we had a complaint back. We got seven holes through his wing. And why did we shoot at it? Oh, God. We'd spent a week dodging bullets from the Messerschmitts, and then they send one of our own fighters along. We'd never seen one before, so we just thought it was another German one, and we fired at it. You know, you could hear as the plane came along the front, you could hear that all the things starting firing. And they complained about it. Silly cows.
Can you describe to us what it's like to be attacked from the air by Messerschmitt? Given that you haven't got a great deal of cover, I would assume.
No, well, I remember when we... the first post we were in, some of the boys said to me, "Look, we can't rig this machine gun up on the post that's in the middle of the section four machine gun." So I said, "Oh, we'll just put it up on the outside, on a stand." Being a bit inexperienced. And it wasn't long after that a bomber, one of the German bombers, came in low over the front, right over our post, and I thought, I'll jump up and see if I can get this thing going. Well, I could see that I didn't have a hope, so I dropped the machine gun and jumped into the post before they arrived. And it was followed by a stream of machine gun bullets, because I could see the pilot talking into his handpiece, probably telling the machine gunner to have a go at this bloke. He looks as if he's going to shoot us down. That was my first experience of being shot at. It was right in the beginning.
How did you sort of cope with this initial experience of obviously being shot at in a wartime situation?
How do we cope with it?
Well, I hear people sort of are concerned that they won't cope with their first experience. They'll.
Yeah. Oh.
I was wondering whether that was something that you ever felt that you might.
No, I don't think it worried us very much, except if they got very close. The boys didn't discuss that. They were all prepared to fight and to shoot back if they got into action itself.
Were you ever experience wounded or people being killed close to you?
Yeah. Not in Tobruk so much as at Alamein.
Okay, we can talk about that. I suppose the initial experience of someone falling beside you or dying, how are you to cope with that, do you think?
Well, my sergeant was shot right next to me as we were attacking on one post. It wasn't in Tobruk, that was at Alamein. Mm. And they must have been using tracer bullets because, his front was alight with flames. So I helped him beat those out before going on to take the post. But I had another section coming and I knew he'd be picked up. And it had three sections, two sections attacking, and one section behind to back up with ammunition and if they got into a tight situation. So,
were you able to sort of think in those situations about how it could have been you or what if it is me next time? Do you allow yourself time?
No, I don't think
you've
got time to think much about that. It never worried me. Although I did get shot that same night, shot in the leg, taken prisoner.
We'll talk about that too when we get to it. In relation to the situation in Tobruk, people talk of Rommel stating that Tobruk was being held by a demoralised force. Was there ever a time when you and your mates had sort of...
No, never. that was all rot as far as he was concerned. I find that the Australian soldiers never give up. They don't toss it in easily.
What are the other troops at Tobruk? Did you experience? You mentioned the Indians earlier on, but what are the other troops and their sort of fighting spirit, do you think?
I think it was pretty high. They were mainly towards the end. They had a lot of. They brought in other troops to take over from us, but there was Australians and Indians mainly, and. The morale was always quite high.
When was it that you started to think of yourselves as the rats of Tobruk?
When it was reported that in Germany they'd reported that the Australians in Tobruk were like rats digging holes for protection. We thought that was great, the rats of Tobruk.